Oops. Okay, we're on the Hof Gimel Omer the Aleph. So we were looking at the Gemara Lamaisa. We saw Ben Taima Machloikas between Rashi and Tosfos, how to learn the Gemara's question. In the final analysis, obviously, all parties agree that you do not need more than nine Dayonim. You only need three. Now, we're going to revisit the Mishnah. Larry was very bothered, quite rightly so. The Gemara, the Mishnah quite clearly says afterwards, Shnei Dayonim. Why are we saying it's a Bezdin, Lecher, it's a Dayon? All of this will be discussed in the Gemara coming up. So have a look. We saw the Gemara yesterday. What so far emerges is that one can choose a Bezdin, the other one can disqualify it, then he can choose a Bezdin, and the first one can disqualify it, and eventually they have to come up with a Bezdin that they both agree upon. But of course, in the final analysis, you will only have three Dayonim there. So it sounds like at the moment, and this the Gemara is going to query, it sounds like at the Gemara that each of the two parties has the absolute right to not accept the Bezdin that's proposed by the other party. So if the classic case, you have a malva and a loiva, a lender and a borrower, and the lender says, you owe me $1,000, you haven't paid back, and the loiva says, yes, I have, or I didn't borrow. So the malva will form his Bezdin, the loiva can reject it, the loiva will choose a Bezdin, the malva will reject it, and eventually they're going to have to come up with a Bezdin that both parties agree upon, and they will judge the case. That's what it sounds like so far. So have a look at the Gemara. It's the fourth line of the Gemara. First word on the line is Echod. Towards the end of the line, says the Gemara, Va'afilu loive motzi ma'akev? Question mark. Rashi says one word, bitmia, in amazement, meaning it's not a statement, it's a question. Even the loive is also allowed to be ma'akev. What, he's also allowed to prevent the other one setting up his bezdin? We just now said it's a two-sided thing, and each one has absolute right to reject the bezdin of the other. So are you telling me that that includes the loive as well? Okay, why should that not be the case? Says the Gemara, because the Ha'amar Rebbe Elazar, surely Rebbe Elazar said, Loi Shonu Elo Malve. Rebbe Elazar said, this whole notion of rejecting the other one's Bezdin only applies by the Loive, by the Malve of a Loive. But the loive, he is forced, he does not get a choice in the matter. V'don be'iroi. What does that mean, don be'iroi? So if you have a look at Rashi, have a look at Rashi. Rashi's on the fifth or sixth narrow line. Bafilu loive motzi ma'akev b'tmiya. For Ha'omar Rebbe Elazar, didn't Rebbe Elazar say at the end of the parak, the come on, later on, b'soif pirakim, in daf lamed aleph, loy shonu. When did we have this statement learned? Echod Omar nidoin kan. What happens if one of them says, I want to be judged here? Let's go to the local Bezdin. Do you remember when we learned the first parak? We learned that every single town had a local Bezdin. There was the Bezdin HaGadol that, of course, sat in the Beis HaMikdash. But we're not talking about cases that require the Bezdin HaGadol. We're talking about Dinei Momonos, which is three would suffice. So if one of them says, let's go to the local Bezdin, Ve'echod Omar no neilech lebeis havad. Let's go to the Beis Havad. Now, what's the Beis Havad? Now, Art Scroll might fill us in over here at the moment, but the Beis Havad seems to be some gathering place of Dayonim, over and above a normal Besdin. Is that how they explain in art school?
I don't see anything actually. I'm sorry. Well, the place of assembly.
What does it mean, a place of assembly?
The Gemara below 31b
Yep.
rules that a litigant can insist on his having his case tried by a more expert court located at the place of assembly. See note 11 on 31b. 31b.
So again, what was this assembly?
The place of assembly. I think that isn't that meant to be a translation of that phrase that you
It
just
is.
had?
What yeah, but do they explain what's the difference between that and a regular Besdin?
Even
If
though
they're
this
more
isn't too.
expert. Oh. So we'll see this coming on. So it may well be there was a particular place of assembly, as it's called, the Beis Vad. And that's where there were expert dayanim. So if one of the two litigants says, listen, I don't want to go to the local Besdin, I want to go to the Beis Vad. Well, then he has a prerogative to do so and say, I do not accept the local Besdin, but rather I want to go to the Beis Vad. And they can do that. However, as Rashi continues,
Yeah, it's only the
Rashi says, Echod Omar Nidoin Kan. One of them says, let's be judged over here, the local Besdin. Ve'echod Omar Neilech LeBeis Havad. The other one says, no, let's go to the Beis Havad. Koyfin. So we force him. V'hoylech LeBeis Havad. And yes, he's got to go to the Beis Havad. However, now look back in the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar said that only applies in the case of the Malveh. The Malveh is the one who pulls the strings over here. Why? Because he's the one who lent the money. So therefore, he is the one who can say who has really the final word. So if he insists, for whatever reason, on going to the Besdin, which is not local, so even though it's a schlep, because you're going to have to leave town and go to the Beis Havad, but that's his prerogative. But the loiver does not have a right to do that. Therefore, the loiver, who for whatever reason says, I prefer to go to the Beis Havad, and the malver says, no, I prefer to keep local, then we would not go with the loiver, and we would listen to the malver. So it's the malver who's pulling the strings. And if that's the case, says the Gemara, how does that fit in with our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, we just said that each one can disqualify and not accept the Besdin proposed by the other party. So it sounds like that we treat both of them absolutely equally, and they've equally got a right to choose which Besdin. Well, how on earth does that fit in with Rabbi Elazar? Rabbi Elazar said that we do not treat them with equal rights, and it's only the Malveh who can choose, let's say, to go to the Beis Havad, but not the Loiva. And that's what the Gemara means. Are you trying to tell me that even the loiver can withhold, can prevent the Besdin that was proposed by the Malveh because you told me either party, the Ha'omer Rabbi Elazar, but surely Rabbi Elazar says, Lo ishanu elo malveh, when it comes to the loiver, we would force him the don be'iroi. And we would force him whether he's got to be in the local town. The loiver says, I prefer to go to the Beis Vad. And the malveh says, I don't want to go to the Beis Vad. I want to go to the local Besdin. So the malveh wins the day. So if the malveh wins the day, you see that we do not listen to the loiver like we do to the malveh. So why does it say in the Mishnah that they both have the right to reject the other one's Besdin? Yeah.
There's a logic behind this because the strategy of the borrower is to say, I'm going to force the Malveh to spend money to go traveling. So he's going to back out because, as it is, I already owe him $1,000. Now he's going to have to spend another $1,000 to travel. So therefore, we don't allow him to do that because that's going to, because then the lender is going to say, you know what, forget the whole case. I'm not going there. So therefore, only the person the I owe you owe me money, and I'm willing to spend more money for you to get my money back. Therefore, only he has the leverage to offer that deal.
Right. And therefore, that proposes that that begs the question. So how can our Gemara says that echad boir loy echad, zeh boir loy echad, each one can choose a bezin? No, they cannot. It's only the malva. Says the Gemara. We're going to have to suggest a teretz, just as Rabbi Yochanan said, with regard to a completely different inyan. He said, "Be'erkois shebesuria shonu." Oh, Hanami. So too over here, we're going to have to apply that same teretz and use that teretz that Rabbi Yochanan said elsewhere. We're going to use it for our sugya. Be'erkois shebesuria. So what are the erkois of Shebasuria? So look at Rashi. Kedama Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan suggested, lekamon b'shmeitz, and later on in our sugya, be'erkois Shebasuria, sheloi hoyu b'kiyin b'din teira. They were not bekim. They were not really mumchim, and essentially they should not really have been allowed to form the bezdin. So if the malva is proposing to go to these erkois in Surya, hilkach therefore afilu loive motzi ma'akiv. So in a case like that, even the loive is able to disqualify that bezdin, meaning, if the malva is proposing to go to a proper bezdin of mumchin, well, then the malva can always choose and the loiva cannot. So why did we say in our Mishnah that either one could reject the bezdin of the other? So the Gemara says we're going to have to say that only applies in one particular case, and that is when the malva is suggesting they should go to the bezdin in Surya, which, to be perfectly honest, is not really a bezdin. They're not bekiyim, they're not mumchim. Under those circumstances, yes, then indeed the loiva can really say, excuse me, I'm not prepared to go to this bezdin, which is not even mumchim, and I'm putting my foot down and I insist that I'm only judged by mumchim. So it turns out, according to this teretz, that's how you have to learn the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not a general rule set in all cases. When the Mishnah teaches us that each one could reject the bezdin of the other, that is not the general rule. The normal rule is the malva can choose. The Mishnah is talking about the exceptional case where for some reason the malva has proposed to go into a second-rate bezdin. Non-mumchim. So if they're non-mumchim, then the loiva could say, excuse me, it's my prerogative to put my foot down. I insist we go to a bezdin where they are mumchim. That's one teretz. Says the Gemara, Rav Papa Omar. Again, it doesn't say Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa Omar is clearly disagreeing with what we just said before. He says, no, afilu teima mumchin. Even if you're going to tell me that the Mishnah is talking about mumchin, I can still suggest a teretz. I can still suggest a teretz. And what is that? Kagoin, for example, Beidina, the Bezdin, the Rav Huna, the Rav Chista. What was the Bezdin of Rav Huna and Rav Chista? There's a Bezdin of Rav Huna and there's a Bezdin of Rav Chista. Look at Rashi. Says Rashi, Beidin, the Rav Huna, the Rav Chista, the Tarvayu, Bechad Mokrim. They are both in one place. Here we're talking about that for whatever reason, there were two bezdins in one town. So now look back in the Gemara, the Gemara explains. If you're talking about a choice between the bezdin of Rav Huna and the bezdin of Rav Chista, the ka'omar lei, so the loiva can say to the malva, mi ka matrachna lecha. Am I bothering you? Am I overexerting you in any way? So how has the Gemara answered the question? Rebbe Lozo said that it's the Malva who can choose which Bezin, and the Leiva doesn't get a say. And yet in our Mishnah it says the Leiva does get an equal say.
No cost involved.
Sorry?
No cost.
Right. So the first teretz was, you're right, because our Mishnah is talking about a very particular case where the Malva has proposed going to a Bezdin of non-mumchin. Well, then the Leiva does have the right to protest. The second teretz is, we're talking about where the choices are of two Bezdins, both in the same town. Then the Leiva really does have a right to say, I'm sorry, I don't accept A, rather I propose B. Do you know why he's got that right? Because by doing so, he's not in any way exerting tircha on the Malva, because they're both local. If the Malva would say, listen, I want to go to the local Bezdin, and the Leiva says, no, I want to go to the base Vad in a different town, then the Leiva has got no right to protest. It's the Malva who pulls the strings. Says Rapopa, that's only because the choices are either local or out of town. So the Leiva has no right to put the Malva under pressure to have this big tirchav to schlep out of town. But where both of the Bezdins are local, then the Leiva could say, excuse me, why can't I reject your Bezdin? I'm going to propose the other Bezdin. That's not putting on any tirchav. They're both local. And if that's the case, we do not need to say that the Mishnah is only talking about this strange Bezdin of non-mumchin. No, even if they are mumchin. But the Leiva is absolutely allowed to protest as long as they're both local.
Rebbe?
Yes.
Why did I have to put two questions? First of all, how come all these cases of Mominus is about Lova and Malva? There are so many cases of Mominus that has nothing to do with Lova and Malva.
Right, correct. But the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Dinei Mominus, so it includes everything. So it's also talking about Lova and Malva. We didn't say it's only talking about that.
And the second thing is, there could be many other disputes other than Mumchem. The guy could feel that one of the judges has a chias in connection to the borrower and things like that. So he has many, he could have many objections.
Yeah, you have to bring a proof. That's the Hemshech of the Mishnah. Do you have to bring a raya that he's apostle, or he's got a korev, or he's got some bias? But merely to say, well, I think they're not experts, or I can't be bothered to schlep out of town, the Leiva doesn't have that right. Now, by the way, have a look at Tosfos, a small little Tosfos, a very interesting Tosfos, Kagoyim, the second Tosfos. Kagoyim beidina d'Rav Huna v'Rav Chista. D'omalei, my komitrachna l'cho, am I being matriach you? Says Tosfos, pirush akuntras, exactly the same way as he began the previous Tosfos, he quotes Rashi. Pirush HaKuntra, as Rashi says, Shahoyu b'mokim echod, that both of these two Bezdins were in the same place. And if they're in the same place, well, then the Leiva really does have the right to say, excuse me, I disqualify, don't accept Bezdin number one. I want to insist we go to Bezdin number two. It's not going to put you onto any tircha. They're both in the same place. Says Tosfos, V'loy Nehira. This has not appeared to me correct. It cannot be that they really are in the identical place. Why not? Because we say in the Gemara of Erev Daf Samach Beis, Terechusta loy hoya moire lifnei Rav Huna. Rav Chista would never paskin a shaila in front of Rav Huna. He clearly considered himself a Talmud of Rav Huna. Afilu beyasa bekutcha. What does it mean, beyasa bekutcha? Beyasa bekutcha is always the expression the Gemara uses when it wants to describe a very, very simple question. Beyasa is an egg, kutcha is in milk. So if I were to ask you, are you allowed to cook an egg in milk? What's the answer? Well, obviously, yes. Most obvious question in the world, of course. What's the problem? So whenever the Gemara wants to give an example of the most simple possible question, the example is like a whole expression. Beyasa de kuchta, an egg in milk. And the Gemara says that Rav Chista would not open his mouth in the presence of Rav Huna. Clearly, he felt either Rav Huna was a much bigger Talmud Chacham or Rav Huna was the Rebbe, he was a Talmud. He did not open his mouth. Even to Paskin, the most simple of all Shilas, if that's the case, the Kol Shekein, the Din, Loi Hoya, Oysa Befonov. Well, if he wouldn't even Paskin, a Beis of the Kuchta Shilas in front of his Rebbe, well, definitely it can't be that he had a Beis Din in the same place as his Rebbe. How can Rashi say that both of these Beis Dins were B'mokim Echad? Are you trying to tell me that Rav Chista had a Beis Din right there in the same place as Rav Huna? It says he wouldn't dare open his mouth in front of him. He wouldn't even paskin the most simple of simple shilas. Never mind the whole Din Torah. So it can't be they were in the same place as Tosfos V'Nireli. Therefore, it appeared to me that they weren't actually literally in the same place. Shehayu smuchim zeh lezeh. Not like Rashi who said they were b'chad mokim in the same place, like they're in the same building. No. They were close, but not that close. Chutz legimel parasois. A distance of 3 parasois away. So yes, Rav Chista would not paskin a shaila if it was right in front of Rav Huna. That he wouldn't do. But to open a bezdin quarter of an hour down the street on the other side of town, yeah, that he would do. That's not in front of the Rebbe. But to say it was literally in the same place, that he would never have done because he wouldn't pass Gan Shaila in front of his Rebbe. I have this situation, by the way, very often. I have the privilege to do Shumash with Reb Nosson Kopshitz, Shlita. So very often people will come into the Beis Seira and ask a Shaila. And they will ask me, okay, so what do you think? And I say, I'm not prepared to express my opinion. It would be a chutzpah for me to express my opinion in front of Rav Nosson. And even in the event, and of course there has been many occasions where I don't understand what my Rebbe paskened or why he paskened it, finish, I can't open my mouth. I'm allowed to, of course, ask the Rebbe, why did you pasken this? Of course you're allowed to. What's the source? Where are you coming from? But for me to pasken a shayla in front of the Rebbe, I wouldn't do. There is, by the way, by extension, this is also something that I have frequently, there is another subject called Chochem Shehoira. Once a Talmud Chochem has paskened on a particular Shaila, you can't now take the same Shaila to somebody else and hope that the second Rav will pasken differently. So very often I have this type of Shaila as well. Somebody, for example, will bring a Shaila and say, could you please examine this? Because I went to another Rav and he says it's no good. Could you look at it? And I say, no. Another Rav has said it's no good. I'm not prepared to get involved. Not just not prepared, it'd be awesome for me to get involved.
So can I give an example? We had a Torah that we had bought from South Africa in the shul, whatever. And some guest comes and his father is some big rabbi from South Africa. We didn't know. We don't even know the guy, but Kanirei, he was a big rabbi. And he comes to the Torah to get his aliyah, and he's parceling the whole Torah left and right.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, you know, and then when we took it back to the sofer, he's like, I don't know what the guy's talking about. There's nothing puzzle about this. So how do you, you know, right. The sofer's a geshmak to sofer from Bnei Brak, the guy that we paid to.
Yeah, very uncomfortable situation. You need a wise rabbi to be able to deal with a situation like this. I'll tell you a little secret. There was a very, very difficult shaila that I had to paskin recently. It could be I mentioned to you, I'm not sure. Where somebody came to me here in the neighborhood and said that his sister-in-law, I think I mentioned this, his sister-in-law was married and divorced, and now she's engaged to get married to a kohen. Did I mention this? And of course, she's a divorcee, and she's not allowed to marry a kohen. Absolute awesome in Hatera. And the question that he was asking was, am I allowed to attend the wedding? He says, my wife's mother, that's the mother of the color, is extremely angry at the possibility that I might not participate in the wedding. So I personally held it was permissible. The problem was, meanwhile, he'd gone to another Rav here in the neighborhood, and the Rav told him it's prohibited. He can't he can't partake in the wedding. So when he was told he can't partake in the wedding, he told his mother-in-law, I'm sorry, I've asked the rabbi, and the rabbi said, I can't come to the wedding, and she apparently blew a fuse. So he went back to this rabbi and said, you really told me I can't go to the wedding? Absolutely. Well, my mother-in-law blew a fuse. And he said, I don't care, I'm not backtracking. At that point, this other rabbi said, you know what? And he sent him to me. Now, I personally felt it was mutter. But clearly, I'm not going to tell him that, yes, it's permissible to do, when the rav that he initially asked, who happens, by the way, to be his rav, I'm not his rav, said it was asa. So very cleverly, when I spoke to Rav Kornfeld, I called Rav Kornfeld, said, well, what should I do? I'm in a tricky situation. Rabbi A has said he should not go to the wedding. I personally hold that he can go to the wedding. And the truth is that this other rabbi has sent the person to me. So what am I supposed to do? Rav Kornfeld just said to me, well, do whatever you think is right. I'm not getting involved. There's too many rabbonim already involved in this show. But then he said to me, he did say it, but I personally hold it's okay.
Sorry, what did he say?
He said he felt it was okay. Again, under the circumstance, it was complicated. Just to double check, I called up one of the Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Kornfeld happens to be very close to him, Rav Moshe Hillel Hirsch, who's American, originally from Lakewood, and he said that it's okay as well. So I told Rav Kornfeld, and he was very excited. So in the end, he went. And of course, this other Rav here in the neighborhood calls me at some unearthly hour. Is it true that you paskened its mutter? And is it true that Rav Moshe Hillel Hirsch said it's not? I said, yes, it is actually. Well, do you mind if I call him to double check? I said, fine, do we like? The next day, he called Ramesh Hirsch. Ramesh Hirsch confirmed that, yes, that's what he's paskin. But I'll call upon him when you get in a situation like this. And I'll tell you the truth. Even after I spoke to Ramesh Hillel Hirsch and Rav Kornfeld, so I spoke to the person who asked me the shayla. I said, listen, I personally held that it was okay to attend. Again, only for a short while, and then you have to leave early. It was a whole thing. And Rav Kornfeld backed this up. And above all, Ramesh Hillel Hirsch, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, said it's okay. Nonetheless, I said to him, I'm telling you absolutely explicitly, I do not go to the wedding based on my psak. I am absolutely not being matirit unless you go back to the original Rav who prohibited it. Because he was the one you asked the shayla to, and he's your Rav. And essentially, I would never have even got involved in the question in the first place, other than your Rav sent you to me. So then I have his permission to express my opinion. Nonetheless, I want you to go back to this Rav and present him the information, and then he will have to make a final decision. Either he will backtrack or he will not backtrack, but I am not being matted. If you want to know my personal opinion, and more importantly, obviously, what Rav Kornfeld held and one of the Gedolei Yisrael held, this is what they held. But I'm not being matter. You cannot go to this wedding unless you get the green light from the Rav who originally paskened otherwise.
Rebbe, you know, it says, Aseh lecha Rav. A young Rav is supposed to know everything about you, the issues with your mother-in-law, your wife, your this, your that. So if he paskens a certain way, it's very, very muzar, very weird that you would then say, you know, Rav, I know you know me in and out for 20 years, but I'm going to have to find the heter here. It's almost like it's sacrilegious.
He didn't say that. He went back to his Rav. Every person is absolutely allowed to ask his Rav to rethink it or revisit it or explain. And if the Rav says, I'm not backing down, then that's all over.
Right.
In this case, he went back and said, listen, it's going to cause a whole family blow up. Which, by the way, just for your information, when I spoke to Ramesh Hillel Hirsch, and again, that was my personal feeling, Ramesh Hillel, that was the main piece of information that decided the shayla. Meaning, essentially, of course it's osur to attend such a wedding like that. But in the event that it sounds like it's going to cause a whole family blow up, and then as we all know, families can be split for years over ridiculous things, that was Rav Moshe Hillel's main piece of information upon which he said, fine, so therefore they should go for a very short while and then explain that they have to leave. Because essentially it's osur for them to be at a wedding like this, and they're only there, Laman Hasholim.
How did the Masada Kedushin matter during the Chuppah?
Excellent question. That was part of the complication. It was like a joke, Masada Kedushin. It was some weird so-called rabbi. It was all very, very, very complicated. It was actually fascinating, Shaila, if you're asking. This girl who's getting married to a divorcee got some piece of paper, which was brought to me, with three signatures from I don't know who, saying it's okay for her to marry the divorcee, to marry the Kohen. How can it possibly be okay to marry a Kohen? A divorcee cannot marry a Kohen. So they wrote that they did inquiries, and they found out that the girl's first marriage, the husband and wife stipulated, she stipulated with her husband that she wants to live here in Israel. And after they got married, indeed, they moved to Israel. But the husband didn't like it here, so eventually he insisted that they move back to America. So this so-called joke Bezdin wrote, well, if that's the case, he didn't keep his condition of marriage first time round, in which case the whole of the first marriage is all null and void, and she was never divorced because she was never married, and therefore she's allowed to marry a Kohen. So I shared this with a number of other Rabbonim, and the general consensus was, not general, unanimous consensus was, this is an absolute joke of a psak, and it's a bizarre, and to the contrary, those who maintain that it's osa to partake in the wedding was precisely because of this point. Because by going and attending to the wedding, you're giving your green light, your approval to this joke of a Bezdin, and can you imagine the terrible kilkul that it can cause, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So don't misunderstand me, even though I felt personally you could go, but I absolutely understood the other side of the coin. The other side of the coin was that you to the contrary, you have to make a protest. You cannot be party to a wedding which is against halacha, which is sanctioned by a joke of a Bezdin. You're causing a whole breakdown in our whole Bezdin and rabbinic system here.
The absurdity of that psak, I would have to imagine that 9 out of 10 get divorces are because one person feels like the other person didn't fulfill his obligations. That's the reason I'm getting divorced. So all of a sudden we never got married.
Right, 100%. If it was a total joke, I don't know who these rabbis. Kids, it was a very.
You promised you're going to support me. You never made a living. I want a divorce. No, so therefore we were never married. You broke your promise. What are you talking about?
Again, I only ever mentioned it because Tosis has brought in this, in you know, being Moira Halacha Bifnei Rabbi. But equally, there's another very, very complicated, delicate situation when you have two rabbonim involved in one shaila. One has to really proceed with precaution. Okay, we're going to hold it over here, and then Hashem will continue next time. Okay, have a